And I believe we are live. I'm going to wait a second here till that little red button flashes on Rockfin so that I know that we're live on all platforms, which I tried to stream to, I think, four different ones today. I usually don't try all to do all of them at once because so many things could go wrong, but hopefully, there we go. And now we're live on Rockfin as well. All right, I have this is the Drive Time News Blast, Propaganda Report, and I'm Brad Binkley, and I have a special guest joining us today to talk about election integrity. Welcome to the show, the godfather of election integrity, if you will, a man who's done more to secure elections than all of Congress combined, Garland Favrito of Voter GA. Garland, welcome to the show. Glad to have you back. I was reading an article in the AJC that had your picture. I'm sure you know which one it is. It had a nice picture of you at the top. They usually try and choose the worst possible picture of people to put up, but that was a pretty good one they had of you. And whenever I read these articles that talk about the work that you do with Voter GA and, you know, the election challenges and all that, they always act like you just started doing this in 2020 when Trump lost. Like out of nowhere, you just started, which couldn't be further from the truth. You were doing this long before Trump, and you weren't doing it because of any specific candidate on the left or the right or wherever else. You were doing it for the sake of election integrity, which without that, there is no democracy. But the news always tries to make it like it's all about Trump because they don't want people to realize that fact. So with that, I know you have an update on the challenges that you are doing. Tell us about it.
Well, yeah. So just to back up for a second, since you mentioned that, I have not seen that article. I don't know if it's out recently.
It was May 11th, I think.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen it. You'll have to send me a copy.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
My subscription expired and I didn't renew it.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing that about what you mentioned is that, as you said, for years and years, most of our core supporters were Democrats who felt that they had been cheated either way from 2002 all the way up through 2019. And then that turned, of course, in 2020 when it was pretty obvious that President Donald Trump got cheated out of electoral votes here in Georgia. So we've been nonpartisan all along, as you said, and it's been a 20-year struggle for really basic things like transparency and integrity in elections. And as you said, it's not a partisan issue. It's something that really we can all get behind.
Yeah, the reason there was that article that I was the AJC when I was referring to. I'll pull it up and I'll show it to you later on. But it started the article off with something like skeptics at Voter GA. It tries to make it sound like you're a conspiracy theorist and crazy kind of right off the bat. And then it just kept referring to you as Donald Trump supporters, which I don't know whether you support Donald Trump. I know you guys don't take an official position, I don't think, but you were never doing it because of Trump. And they don't want people to realize that.
I think I told you and Monica, but it's a matter of public record in our court case. I did not vote for Donald Trump. I voted for a third party candidate, a Constitution Party candidate who was running, who I had known and personally. And I, my vote was never counted. It was never counted. And that's a matter of public record in the court case, Favorito v. Juan. So, apparently that's an incredibly intentional deception to mislead the public. It sounds like something Martin Easy might do.
Yeah. Tell us about the update, and then I'll find that article and I'll show it to you.
Well, we've got a ton of updates. Well, we have a ton of cases. There's still six active cases in Georgia that we have brought. All nonpartisan issues for election integrity and transparency. Really common sense things that most any voter in the state of Georgia would support. And we can't, haven't been able to get some of these passed. We haven't been able to get hearings on some of them. But the one that we had a press conference on last week was our Fulton County counterfeit ballot case. And that case, as you know, Brad, we won. In the Georgia Supreme Court, we won a decision that overrode both the Court of Appeals and the lower courts, as those cases do. And that was when the lower court tried to claim that we did not have any standing. And the Supreme Court ruled unanimously, all Democrats and Republicans, that we have always had standing to sue a government official who violates the law or a government agency. And they said citizens, residents, taxpayers, and voters have that standing. And they said they have always had the standing. They didn't say it was a new ruling. So we got that. Finally, after 4 months after that ruling, the Court of Appeals kicked that case back to Judge Amaro after a 2-year and 4.5-month delay. And then Judge Amaro basically handed this case off to Judge Robert McBurney, who agreed to accept it with the obvious intent that he was going to quash our case, like he did on the David Perdue case, in a biased manner with basically what we call extrajudicial partisan comments. And he did this also, he exposed the, as presiding over the grand jury case, a special.
So what is extrajudicial partisan contents or comments?
He made very demeaning remarks about the David Perdue petitioners. We basically presented those remarks at our press conference last week, which is up on voterga.org on the events tab for all to see. And you can see the bias that this man has against anyone who believes or has evidence that there were fraud, errors, and irregularities in the 2020 election.
It's unbelievable how hard they go after the actual evidence. So, like, they don't want it to come out there, and they've weaponized the justice system, it seems like, to prevent it from going further. They've railroaded you so many times, and they work with the media to make it seem like it's all just crazy, wild conspiracy theories so that people don't actually look at, like, the stuff that you've done. Like, you've shown that there were discrepancies, and then they just stop you from going any further.
Right, Brad. And those discrepancies would warrant discovery in almost any case in the land. And we have been prevented from doing the discovery that would have proven the fraud, errors, and irregularities in the 2020 election. So essentially, we have the judges are accomplices to the crime.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't wrap my head around it, why that is. I know in some cases there's people who are funded by whoever on the left. They don't want to prosecute stuff with the DAs. When it comes to this, I just don't understand it. And the fact that you're able to continue to get some of these rulings to the appeals to turn around and to continue moving forward slowly but surely, I personally think that one day you will be vindicated. It might be years from now. But I do think one day it will come out.
I hope I'm still alive to see it.
Yes.
Otherwise, you can put it on my tombstone.
Yes, right. So what's the next step with all of this?
Well, the next step is we filed a motion to recuse Robert McBurney from our case for clear partisanship. He will rule on the sufficiency of our complaint. That's all he's entitled to rule on. And then another judge will have to rule on the recusal motion itself. And the other area of bias that we pointed out in our case, in addition to the Perdue petitioners, which are similarly situated to us, it was the witnesses in the grand jury and exposing excerpts of a grand jury report, which I call it, I use that term loosely. It was 9 pages, mostly blanked out. But it was kind of a scam of a report. In doing that, he cited a Georgia Supreme Court case called Thompson versus Macon Bibb Hospital Authority. And he said that case gave him the authority to do that. If you read the case, it says exactly opposite of what Robert McBurney claimed in his release of that. What the case ever actually says is, and it says it a half a dozen times, and we read all the quotes from the case, but it says that you cannot release information if their witnesses are readily identifiable. And the witnesses before that special grand jury that Fannie Willis was conducted had been published over a variety of news sources the complete list of alternate electors that were established back in March of 2020, that has been public record and still is. So, and in addition to the other folks who testify, you know, there's pictures of them coming in and out of the courthouse, and they're all well known. So they were completely identifiable, and the Supreme Court is explicit on that over and over again. In that same case he referenced, it says you cannot release information from a grand jury that would possibly compromise witnesses to that grand jury if they, you know, because they may never have been indicted.
And well, they certainly didn't have a problem doing that. That was all over the news.
Yeah, well, that was Robert McBurney who did that, and now he wants to rule on our case.
Well, you know, your persistence is inspiring. I will say that, and what I can hope for is that it will inspire others to persist the same in a skeptical, investigative manner, despite what they do, even though they're going to try to pull those strings of power to push back on that. But what do you think of the Fannie Willis grand jury over? I mean, this thing is just a joke to me.
Well, it is a joke, and we went into some of the details of that in our press conference that's up there on Tuesday. But, you know, they allegedly were supposed to investigate the phone call between Donald Trump and Brad Raffensperger. You know, phone calls are legal in both Georgia and America.
Right.
They call 75 witnesses at Fulton County taxpayer expense. That's my money.
Yep.
That is used to go on this witch hunt looking for something. It appears now that they have completely parted ways from the original investigation and they are looking at other stuff. I have no idea what that is. They have claimed that some witnesses may have committed perjury, but at the same time, Judge McBurney released that statement, which basically implicates every witness as being a liar, as well as us, the petitioners who are similarly situated to these witnesses, because we believe that there is fraud, errors, and evidence of wrongdoing in the 2020 election. So he was prejudiced in that manner. But then, in addition, he released a statement saying that where the grand jury claimed that they found no evidence of fraud, errors, or irregularities that would overturn the 2020 election. And in reality, Fannie Willis went out of her way to block all of the evidence of that from the grand jury, specifically evidence from David Perdue petitioners, from our petitioners, from all the voter GA research we've conducted over the last 2 years, as well as the Carolyn Jeffords case, which is, she's got an identical case to ours, which is going on concurrently. So all of that evidence was blocked by Fannie Willis from the grand jury, which has now completed its, whatever its mission was. And that's fascinating in itself. So basically there was obviously, to me, to my way of thinking, there was an intentional attempt by the district attorney to basically dumb down the grand jury and get a bogus conclusion out of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I saw Raffensperger on CNN the other day after Trump's CNN town hall, and the lady asked him if he felt pressured during that phone call to go find votes that Trump did not earn. And Raffensperger very deliberately did not answer that question, started talking. It was very obvious that, no, he felt no pressure to go do that based on that answer. And all you got to do is listen to that phone call. And know that nothing they say is real about that is reality. And it's just like you said, she gets up every morning and just goes and tells a lie and spends all this taxpayer money and has all these resources they waste for just a completely bogus thing because they want to find some reason to indict Trump again. Do you think that they will?
No, I don't. I don't think that they will, because the evidence, if they do that, all the evidence will come out. So I think that's why they are avoiding that. And they're probably going to try to go after some high profile targets with some claim that they lied to the grand jury, which is going to be bogus because the grand jury has no idea of the fact that there was a massive amount of fraud, errors, and irregularities in the 2020 election. So they'll probably try to do something like that. I don't think that they will have, the courage to go after Donald Trump because he didn't do anything, first of all, and they're going to have to make up another false allegation like they did with Alvin Bragg in New York when he has no crime there. There was no crime when the Democrat House tried to impeach Trump, and there was no constitutional basis for attempting to impeach him when he was out of office. So all of these things are smoke screens, and they're incredibly evil, corrupt smoke screens for control of the American government. Yep. And that's what we're really fighting here, as you know.
Yeah, it's they're using the justice system as a propaganda weapon to create the sense that Trump has been convicted of all of these things. I knew right away when that thing happened in New York, I was like, watch, they will immediately start changing what the outcome of this was and start just calling Trump a convicted sexual assault offender, which can be further from the truth in this civil case that happened. And the next day, that's what they're called. They're blatantly, they are the ones who are defaming him. And yet he's being held liable for defamation and $5 million to this con artist female. This lady's a con artist, clearly. And it's like a good time to be a swindler in America when you can just say Trump grabbed me by whatever and I need $5 million. Or you can say he talked about the 2020 election. It's just crazy. You can't even talk about it without the media like just, oh, you're evil.
So wasn't that like 30 years later?
Yeah, it was like 25 years later, and apparently it happened in a department store in New York, which is one of the most famous department stores in the city. It's been in tons of movies, and it's in like right there in the heart of New York, and it's always just filled up with people, but somehow there was nobody there, nobody around. Somehow a door in the dressing room where you have to get a key to get into was just left wide open, and just it was empty. It's the whole story is just completely, it doesn't make any sense, and the lady...
Yeah. And we don't even know what day it happened on. Is that right?
We don't know what year it happened. She doesn't even know what year. So Trump can't provide evidence of where he was to counter the claim. It's crazy. And they do this. It's a different type of case with Fannie Willis, but it's the same type of stuff in this fabrication of reality to try and get some sort of indictment. I did not think they would indict him at first down here, but now I'm starting to think that they know it'll probably lose on appeal, but if they indict him, then he won't be able to really appeal it until probably after the election. So it'll give the appearance of him being convicted of things again, and it'll affect the vote, is what I think might happen. We'll see.
Yeah, it's kind of fascinating that they would go to all of the ends of the earth with lies and corruption just to prevent Donald Trump from being elected. I mean, they must have a vested interest in a lot of stuff to do that.
Absolutely. We have a couple questions here in the chats if you're ready to take a few.
I am.
Aaron asks, are you going to be targeting these 7,000 missing ballots, chain of custody documents?
I'm not sure exactly what Aaron is referring to there. What we're targeting is 147,000, 148,000 mail-in ballots. We want to see those ballots because we have four sworn affidavits that they were... they're fraudulent. And the reason is they were mail-in ballots. They were not folded from being mailed. They were not written with a writing instrument. It appeared they were copied as toner. And they're on the wrong paper stack, we believe. And also they are voted the same way. All down ballot races, like 100 ballots in one batch. So that's what we are after. We want to see those. We want experts to inspect those. We are want to conduct the inspection at our cost and while maintaining the balance in the chain of custody of the elections officials. So there can be no argument or disagreement or excuses for us being able to do this.
What are some of those? You talked about the printed, the folded ballots and the circles being perfect and voting the same way. What are some of the tactics used to carry out a fraud like this? I know the one you spoke of, there's vote harvesting tactics. What are some people can kind of look out for and maybe some new ones that you think might emerge?
Well, yeah. So, Brad, so ballot trafficking, I think, probably cost the 2020 election to be allocated to the wrong person. But the other thing that is very important is that the electronic vote alterations, which we have seen as a result of the ballot images being made public, those ballot images were electronically altered before the results were certified. So that's of grave concern to us as well. And there's a lot of other symptomatic things, such as, you know, having election processes that are not visible to the public. And the list goes on and on of other things you can do. We need security grade paper to, you know, those are preventive measures. But I think those two things, actually, the third one would be the funding that came in from Mark Zuckerberg, the CTCL. That basically changed the outcome as well, because he put $45 million into counties in Georgia. 94% of that money went to counties won by Joe Biden. And the top 10 counties that received funds all went to Joe Biden. And what that did was it increased the voter turnout in those heavily partisan counties by about 35%, and it caused a net increase of 200,000 votes for Joe Biden in a race that was decided by 11,779.
Yeah, and Stacey Abrams had a lot of the tactics of vote harvesting and, you know, getting people who are hammered drunk to sign up and just anything that they can do. And then they turn around and they say the other side is doing it. It's I can't remember. It's not psychological projection. There's actually a propaganda term for it. I covered it in the show the other day. It'll come to me in a second. What's the likelihood, David asked, that the 2024 will see the same issues with election integrity?
Extremely high. We have not made enough progress legislatively to change things. I would say it's going to be a very, very high. We're going to do everything we can to try to get some legislative legislation passed immediately when the session starts. I actually was meeting on that today. But right now, as it stands, you could probably see most of the same issues again, because they just haven't been tightened down enough.
Do you think that, I think a lot of this AI stuff is blown out of proportion on purpose, but do you think that this will somehow play a role in the 2024 election?
Not
these
really.
Videos and stuff that they're trying to make us think that there's going to be a bunch of videos that aren't real, but they look so real that people believe them. And that is going to somehow affect things. I don't buy it because I think the AI is really kind of bad personally.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of the vote count, I don't see AI as playing a part. It might play some part in the various psychological aspects of voting that you're saying, but not for the actual count.
Aaron asked, will there be a joinder with the Halderman report?
So there have been numerous people, numerous organizations who have tried to get that Halderman report released. It's pretty damning. And the judge, Totberg, has refused to release it. So what that's saying is the security of our current systems are so bad that a U.S. district court cannot release the report that defines how bad they are. That is an indictment of the whole system if I've ever heard it.
Yeah.
So, but that's kind of the case. So we have, of course, the Halderman reports in the Curling v. Raffensperger case. Our case is separate, although Ricardo, one of our voter GA co-founder, is on that case as a plaintiff. But what we have is we have actual proof that the election results were electronically altered before certification in 2020 in Fulton County, which is far, far greater than anything that the Haldeman report can come up with, because it's just academic. It's academic theory, and it's good. It's good theory, and it's sound logical theory, and I'm sure it's right, but it's still theory. What we're talking about here is actual occurrences in the 2020 election that far and away greatly exceed anything that can be in the Haldeman report. And we're just trying to get that evidence into a case. And that's why they're blocking us so bad.
Yeah. And if you were to join with it, would there be a risk that could, if there was a problem with that could taint your case?
I don't know legally how you join with a report.
Yeah, yeah.
You can intervene in the case. We've chosen not to do that for a couple of reasons, but I don't think you can have a joinder with a report. At least not that I know of.
Do you guys have? I know you've had a lot of people sign affidavits, and you talked about somebody, a plaintiff representing in that case. Has there been instances where people are afraid or worried about being a plaintiff or signing an affidavit because of the environment that demonizes people who take this point of view?
For the most part, our plaintiffs or petitioners are, we have more than we needed, and we probably put too many on our case. We had 9 petitioners on there, and we should have probably could have gotten by with 2, or maybe 4 at the most. But people came out of the work to join on. Originally, they weren't afraid. You know, we just asked them to put their name to it, and they were glad to do that. So,
yeah.
I haven't had a lot of concern about people being attacked, but they certainly are going to go. They're trying to go after the lawyers in particular.
Yeah,
not the plaintiffs, because that would look bad on them.
Mm-hmm. Frighten Me asked, didn't the Supreme Court deem the voting machines unconstitutional? Why were they still used during the midterms?
No, the voting machines have not been deemed unconstitutional. The old machines were deemed unconstitutional by Judge Totenberg. And then Brad Ravensburger bought the new machines. Then Judge Totenberg stated that the new machines violate 2 Georgia laws, which is absolutely correct on, because the system cannot produce an elector verifiable paper ballot. And it doesn't put the choices in human readable form for the voter. And the choices are accumulated out of a QR code that no one can read. So, it's crazy stuff. So you would think they would have never bought this system. In fact, we recommended personally to Brad Ravensburger not to buy that type of a system. So they have not actually been deemed unconstitutional. However, the issue of the legality is still before Judge Totenberg in the Curling v. Ravensburger case. So you never know what might happen there.
Yeah, and you know, Brad Raffensperger is awful. I think that's clear. Anybody who's followed his career. So he's a Republican, but he is in lockstep with the establishment narrative around this. So they have the establishment Republicans who agree with the Democrats that you're not allowed to talk about 2020. And then you have anybody who questions 2020 who's called a MAGA, Trumper, racist, Nazi, Russian, or whatever smear they can throw at it. And Raffensperger is definitely in the establishment side of it here. I'm not. Well, go ahead.
Yeah. So Raffensperger has done everything. We have 7 different things he's done as Secretary of State, which is aligned. He aligns not just with the establishment, but his actions have aligned the Georgia Secretary of State's office with George Soros, with the World Economic Forum, with Mark Zuckerberg, with David Becker. We saw him recently, who's funded by both Soros and Zuckerberg, and a highly extreme partisan. And he's also aligned with people who are documented Trump haters. So every product that he has brought into Georgia, the source of it is some type of a Trump hater or Republican hater. So the fact that he has got an R behind his name is just basically a joke.
It's a show. Yeah. And he ain't no Southern Georgian. You know, he's from Canada. And the only information you can find out about his past is basically from his parents' obituaries. And it kind of looks like that, you know, perhaps a CIA agent. I'm speculating there. But when you look at the background, that's definitely a thought that pops into mind. You mentioned something that.
That was good.
Like his family was from, they lived right outside of Arlington, right there near the CIA headquarters. I can't remember off the top of my head some of the careers that his mom and dad had, but they were right in line with some of that stuff. And he's got a sister who had a bunch of Twitter accounts that she was using to just anti-Trump all the time throughout like his entire reign as Georgia Secretary of State. He's definitely a plant, in my opinion. Are you familiar with Mark Mollick Brown?
I'm not.
So Mark Mollick Brown is like besties with George Soros. Like he lives in a house next door to George Soros in New York, and he is the president of the Open Society Foundation, George Soros's Open Society Foundation. And he was on the board of Smartmatic for years and years, and he is in all of these. He's like a royal, or he's been blessed or knighted or something by the royals, and he's in all of these think tanks. He's at the World Economic Forum, and I saw him at Davos talking about the work that he does in Africa and in Georgia. Atlanta, Georgia specifically, because he works with Stacey Abrams on some stuff. I found some connections there. And this guy has, since the 80s, his whole career has been going around to different countries and interfering in elections. And as it got more modern, using voting machines to interfere in elections. And he brags about this stuff. I found old articles of this guy from the, I think the first time he did it was in the early 80s, and he's bragging about how he was lying and manipulating people to subvert an election in another country. And this is the guy working with Soros, working with Stacey Abrams, who was ahead at Smartmatic, who I'm certain is probably in some way involved in the Dominion lawsuit. And it trickles all the way down from the highest levels of power in the UK.
Wow. See, that's what's always amazing about you, Binkley. You come up with all this amazing research that just blows us all away. Now, I was not aware of all that, but yeah. It fits with everything that we know so far.
Jeff asked, can you recap Eric Spikin's signature findings? I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with that.
Actually, I can do that. So Eric Spikin was the expert witness in the Kerry Lakes trial that just concluded here recently. And Eric testified as an expert witness that you cannot verify signatures in under 3 seconds.
All right.
And what Kurt Olson, who's the attorney for the Kerry Lake, what he provided, which was not refuted, Eric Spikin's testimony was not refuted, nor was Kurt Olson's testimony that there were 207, or not testimony, but evidence, that there were 274,000 ballots that were allegedly verified in less than 3 seconds. 70,000 of those were verified in less than 2 seconds. It's a virtual impossibility. So the argument was that Maricopa did not complete signature verification in accordance with Arizona law, 15650 or something like that. And you can even see the video of one of the signature verifiers just sitting there with his hands pressing the keyboard down and just letting the screen roll. And that was basically allegedly verifying signatures. He was supposedly verifying signatures.
And the human was verifying the signatures as they were just flying by on the screen?
Exactly. They were just flipping like that. And he had his hand on the button. The screen was flipping about once a second. It's a great clip. We've shown that in our meetings the last 2 weeks. Amazing. And we found out there were 11 verifiers 11 verifiers that verified all of their signatures at a 100% approval rate, 0% rejection rate. And that was, you know, not just a few hundred, but up to 5,000 or 6,000. And in one case, it was over 20,000, 20,500 signatures verified with a 0% rejection rate. So it's clear that Maricopa County violated Arizona law. I don't know how clearer you have to make it. But then the judge copped out by saying, well, there was no time embedded, incorporated into the law that said you have to spend on each signature. Well, of course there's not. No legislature is going to legislate how a process is done. The legislators, and I've worked with them for 20 years at least, they legislate what a process must do. That's not how it should have been done. So what the court should have done in that case, I think it was Judge Robert Thompson, they should have ruled in accordance with all the precedents nationwide, and according to, as well as Arizona law, which says that you should rule in accordance with the commonly accepted meanings of the terms, unless the law states otherwise. So if the law says that you have to verify signature, it's commonly accepted that verify means that you're going to compare it to something else, right, which in this case is a signature on file. So instead of ruling in accordance with the law and the case precedents, Judge Thompson apparently decided to basically cop out in some cowardly manner because he didn't want to do the right thing. And the right thing was would have been to overturn the election and conduct a new election because Maricopa County violated the signature verification law. That was, to me, proven beyond any shadow of a doubt in that in Kerry Lake's case.
You know, that's interesting. The way that reality has been flipped on its head and things that just seem so obvious and common for so long, for all of our lives, are now when it behooves the establishment to act like it's not common sense, to treat it as something like bad. That can translate over to the court's interpretations of past cases that they might have viewed as inferred or common, like it sounds like is going on in this case where, well, they didn't write a law saying that you have to do this, but of course you have to do that. It just makes sense. And I do wonder if they have considered the possibility that these people are verifying the votes, or maybe they're just robots who can read at superhuman speeds.
Well, you know, what's right is wrong. Truths become lies. Lies is true. The world is really upside down right now, and we have to do everything we can to turn it back right side up.
Absolutely. And that term, that propaganda term I was looking for earlier, is called mirror propaganda or mirror image propaganda. And that's just this intentional attempt to say that your enemy is doing the exact thing that you're doing for the purpose of demonizing them so that you can get away with it.
Yes. And we've seen that multiple times here for example, we have those in the news media calling us liars when we have all the evidence and we're for transparency and they're not. So everything is upside down right now. The news media is calling the election integrity advocates liars because they, in fact, are the ones that are evil and corrupt, and they're the ones who are lying. That's a great example.
Absolutely. Another question here from Jeff, who says, wasn't there a large amount of memory flash drive fobs ordered to be deleted?
Yes. And great question. Those flash drives had the ballot images on there. The original 2020 ballot images, which were required to be retained by state law and federal law for 2 years. And we found that 1.7 million original ballot images across 70 counties were deleted in violation of both federal and state law. Election retention record. They should have been retained for 2 years. And we found out that in a couple of cases, these former and current state election directors former director Chris Harvey and current director Blake Evans had sent emails to at least one or two of the counties saying that it was okay to go ahead and delete those. It's in spite of the fact that what they were telling them to do was in direct violation of federal and state law. And in addition, the state election board has a rule that says that counties can do that. And that is also in direct violation of federal and state law. We notified the election board about the illegality of their rule. We have tried to work with them as best we could. We have threatened to sue them over that. And they still have not changed the rule to make it conform to federal and state law.
Well, yeah, which is that makes me think of the January 6th, where Pence was, he could come up and Pence could do something, which there was, the law is slipping my mind, but where there was actually a law that would allow Pence. And then the media is just like, no, that's not true. That's just symbolic. And then they come around and Congress changes it. You know, after the fact, they amended the law so that he would not be, the vice president would not be allowed to prevent the vote from being certified, I think it was. And these guys didn't even go that far to change the law. They just apparently violated it. It's like the mob is running the justice system, is what it seems like right now.
I don't think there's any doubt about that, Brad. I mean, look at the FBI's invasion of Mar-a-Lago. They have arrested many of Trump supporters. They're trying, you know, they got the January 6th situation. You've got, I believe the Central Intelligence Agency is involved in the media deceptions. You've got this whole weaponization of the American government against the people for political purposes. It's just absurd. It's got to stop. We only have a couple of years left to fix this, or it's going to be too late for all of us.
And it's right in people's faces, too. You have John Brennan, the former CIA director, who it was just laid out in the Durham report that he knew about the attempt, the plan to vilify Trump as being a Russian stooge since 2016. Like early on, he knew about it, yet he continued to go on and be a spokesperson for it. And I thought it was funny after that report came out. I was like, watch, John Brennan will be right back on MSNBC saying the exact same thing. And he was. He's just right back on MSNBC, a former CIA head, still talking about Trump Russia, because nobody who watches that network reads the Durham report or cares about the reality of the situation.
Yeah, and you have the same thing with CNN and the former NSA director.
Yeah, Clapper,
who lied. Thank you. Who lied to Congress and was outed by the Snowden. All the evidence that Eric Snowden came forward with. They proved he lied to Congress, and then Clapper was still on CNN.
He's right back. It's Mockingbird 2.0, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so here's that image of you, Garland, in the AJC on screen there. And this is from May 11th, and the headline is Appeals Court Resurrects Georgia Ballot Inspection Case of 2020 Election. And right there in the subheadline, election skeptics want to review ballots for signs of fraud. Now, I like the term skeptic, but I know they're using it in a demonizing way there, because that's just how they always use it in the AJC.
I'm okay with that. I've been called worse.
Yes, I'm sure.
By Mark Meese, too, so I'm good with that.
What's the worst slur or lie somebody said about you since all of this began?
That's a good question. By the way, just signs of fraud. It's not that we want to look for signs of fraud. We know the fraud already exists. So that was a very deceptive headline there. I just wanted to point out. Yeah, so the worst thing that's been said about me, but I'll tell you, the probably the biggest lie that's been said about me is, and it wasn't really all that bad, but it was a guy named Alan Duke, who Mike Lindell fusses about all the time. He had some kind of a fact check thing that he was fact checking something in social media that was reported back when we had found some the evidence of the Ware County vote flip, in which votes were flipped from Trump to Biden. It was just a small amount, 37, but the published results from the Secretary of State's office and the county elections director confirmed that. And we even got written confirmation from the elections director that those totals were correct. So we presented that, and somebody picked up on it in the social media that's saying that, okay, we had done an analysis of the voting machines, had gotten a hold of those and found that it was incorrect. Well, we had not done that. We just simply took the published reports of what was, you know, it was public record, and we proved it from with public records. So Alan, who's attempting to try to turn that story around, so he is going after the social media. He didn't go after the actual report that we had produced,
yeah.
But he called me up one time, didn't identify himself as any kind of a reporter or anything, because he was afraid I'd probably hang up on him. But so he asked me about that, and I told him that, no, that story is not correct. What is correct is, it is correct that the machines flipped, but the incorrect piece of it is that we didn't need access to the voting machine to prove that. So, and when he does his report, he calls me a Trump supporter.
Yeah.
And what's so funny about that is that, you know, it's public record I didn't vote for Trump. I've never even been in the Republican Party. I've been in the Constituent Party for 20 years. He had to know that. But he lied to his people, whoever his two or three people who actually read his stuff, whatever his audience is, with obviously an intentional intent in my part to deceive his listeners and to believe in that it was just a partisan effort.
And that's the thing. It's definitely intentional. There's no doubt about that. And that's what got me thinking about what I was talking about earlier in the show. I don't know if the screen's kind of fuzzy. I don't know if you can see it, but it says in this article that has your picture at the top of it, it says, no fraudulent ballots were found by state elections investigators, but supporters of Republican Donald Trump want the courts to help them pursue allegations that illegitimate ballots contributed to Democrat Joe Biden's victory in Georgia. It's the same thing you're talking about.
Well, exactly. We don't know if any. The truth is that those ballots have never been looked at. There's never any evidence entered into court. Any actual evidence. Nobody has come forward and testified to say that they looked at the ballots. And if they did, the reason why is that they would have been tampering with the ballots and violated election law, because those ballots are sealed. So there was an amicus brief filed, and the judge, Amaro, in his last-ditch effort, attempted to get evidence entered into the record from a party which was not party from the case. And that's where that claim is coming from.
Yeah. And you're a Donald Trump supporter, obviously, which he makes sure to pump that into the article there, which, you did not vote for him. Like, it's crazy.
Right. Didn't vote for him. It never been a Republican Party. And that's just the bizarre part of it all. But I have to give the guy credit. The man told the truth. There was fraud, errors, and irregularities. And he has not backed down on that. And for that, I have to give him a lot of credit.
Right. Yeah. Because they do get pressured. I mean, there's a lot of you get social pressure, and some people get, I'm sure, pressures from their bosses to just align with the narrative. I mean, you have Jake Tapper on CNN, who was given an award and $2,500 for reporting on the Russia collusion. And I read the award page the other day, and it said that they gave him and Carl Bernstein, and there's two other CNN people, that award because they single-handedly put the term, the dossier, into the public lexicon. And I'm like, which an entire document that just proved, and again, what everybody already knew, that the whole dossier was a bogus plan by opposition parties and wasn't verified at all. Not one piece of it, it said. And they were given $2,500 and a prestigious award, they made it seem like. And I'm still waiting for them to give the money back.
Who gave them that?
This was the White House Correspondents Association.
Oh,
so.
Oh, the White House Correspondents for
yes.
Well, I only heard the term dossier on the other networks that were, and that was used with the word false dossier. So
those
two words go hand in hand. So if they weren't using them both, then there's something wrong.
Yeah, yeah. These journalists, they're fraudsters working for the state. So how can people help? What you got any events? You got any fundraisers, anything going on that people can be a part of?
Well, yeah, I'm going to, if you're down in the Fayette-Coweta area, I'll be speaking at the GOP breakfast this Saturday, which I think is the 3rd of June, and that's about 8:30. I'll be down there. Next week, we'll be going to the Georgia GOP convention. The following week, I'll be going to Douglasville. If you want to catch up with me, that's some a couple of places where we could do it. We are nonpartisan nonprofit, and I'm a volunteer just trying to save the country here, save Georgia anyway. So that's some great. If you want to try to track where we are, just go to voterga.org volunteer tab and sign up. You'll get an invitation to our call, or you can text the word truth to 404-777-0067. That's a pretty easy one to remember. So that's all a right. you can get engaged with us.
Fantastic. Where's the GOP convention being held?
They're going to hold that in Columbus. It's pretty exciting. We understand that Donald Trump's going to be there on Saturday, we believe. And they were going to have Mike Pence on Friday. I understand he is canceled. And Carrie Lake is going to replace him. A lot of folks are excited about that. What's kind of ominous about this is that Governor Kemp, Secretary Ravensburger, and Attorney General Chris Carr will not be present.
Yes, fantastic.
So this is going to be a very exciting time. I think that they have agreed that they have lost the support of the Republicans in the state of Georgia.
Do you think Kemp is going to run for president?
That is too early to say. There was speculation he's going to run for U.S. Senate here in Georgia.
Okay.
I don't know. Of course, you know, same Jeff Duncan had the same speculation. I doubt it, but who knows?
Yeah, I think he possibly could. There's a comment from earlier that I wanted to put up that I think you just spoke to about them losing the support of Republicans. Dave says, thank you, but it's so discouraging. We have a Republican governor and state legislature. Why can't more be done? Well, I think that seeing what you just described, where those Republicans aren't going to be there, signaling that they have lost support of Republicans is a good start.
Yeah. And just because a candidate has an R behind their name, that doesn't make them a Republican. They are Republican in name only, rhinos. They are there for their own interests. And the Republicans can be just as compromised and corrupt as Democrats. So
absolutely.
So we've got to get away from this mindset that R's are good and D's are bad or vice versa.
Yeah, absolutely. They taught a lot of these propagandists write in their books, Saul Alinsky, Edward Bernays, and all of them. They write about how not to get locked in to believing the ideologies of the groups you're organizing and manipulating, because then you will be as controlled by it as they are. And I think I always think about that if I feel like I'm getting too caught up in something. I would take a step back and think about who's pulling the strings there. Is there any advice you would offer to people who, because a lot of times people do feel discouraged or overwhelmed because of the way it appears to be working in the media anyway. Do you have any advice you could offer to help people remain optimistic and active the way that you are?
Well, it's a long uphill battle. It's a permanent, the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. I think that was Thomas Jefferson. And you just have to keep it day in and day out. I'm pretty optimistic because I've seen so many people come out of the woodwork. We have gotten we've gotten favor with a lot of the key legislators and the leadership. They know we're telling the truth. They want to do something, but they're constrained. Things are looking brighter to me than they ever have to get this problem really, really solved. But it's going to take an incredible amount of determination. So I'm just going to stick with it until it's done. We don't really have a choice because it's now and never. Yeah. We have got to stop it now. It's a war between right and wrong, and it's really a satanic war. It's a war between evil and good, and we've got to just keep fighting because we only have a couple of years left. The way we're going, America will be basically overthrown by a bunch of communists if we don't continue to fight.
Yeah, absolutely. The more people speak out like you do and do the kind of work you do, the more others feel brave enough to do the same. Because there are, it's called a spiral of silence where the silent majority is another way to put it, where people are, they believe something, but they think that everybody else disagrees with them. But in reality, most people also agree, but they're also remaining silent. And the more people are vocal about it, then the more room people have there. And the way I always think about it is, it can be easy to get demoralized with what all this stuff, but that's the exact purpose of a psychological warfare demoralization campaign, is to demoralize people. So to be demoralized is to give them exactly what they want, and to simply find the hope and optimism in it is in and of itself an act of resistance that I'm like, I don't ever want to give them what they want. So I'm going to remain hopeful. And words of wisdom, Garland, thank you very much for joining us today. Always fantastic to have you on the show and good to see you again. Frighten Me says, thank you, Garland and Brad, for the great information and update. And Garland, anytime you have an update, you're always welcome on the show. I love talking to you. Anything else?
No, I think you made a great point, though, right at the end about the psychological warfare conducted by the media. And it has the hallmark and fingerprints of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Absolutely. I think that's a great place to wrap it up. Thank you, Garland. Thank you, everybody who participated in the chats. And we'll talk to y'all next time. Have a fantastic rest of your day.